Get rolling, my man.
3, 2, 1. The No Bullshit News Hour is brought to you by American Coney Island, celebrating 102 years. It's Detroit's oldest family-run restaurant and birthplace of the famous Detroit Coney Dog, chili, mustard, and Vidalia onions. It's my personal favorite, and that's no bullshit. You want a piece of Detroit? Head downtown to the corner of Lafayette and Michigan Avenue. Can't miss it. It's the red, white, and blue building shaped like a slice of pie. They got that, too. Fresh every day. Always delicious, always open, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365. The dogs snap when you bite them, and the chili is a 100-year-old family recipe, and the beer is cold. Visit the Detroit restaurant or the one in the D Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, or, hey, Dads, the Detroit Zoo. They sell beer out back there, too.
Nice.
Order a Coney Island kit straight to your or a friend's door. Go to AmericanConeyIsland.com. Luke Nowacki. He wants to say to you, maybe you're a big-time city official who can travel with your entourage on the city's dime. Maybe you can hook up your girlfriend with government contracts.
That'd be nice.
But if you're not among the elite who can make your pals' pockets fat off the taxpayers' back, you're going to have to provide for your own retirement and theirs. If you have questions whether you're on the right track, call financial specialist Luke Nowacki at 248-663-4748. I know I have. It's important. Support these people, and they'll support you. Grow your assets from pension planning to college savings plans. Your politicians are fucking depending on you. Luke Nowacki, 248-663-4748. Securities and investment advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Royal Alliance Associates, Inc. is separately owned, and other entities and our marketing names, products, or services referenced here are independent of Royal Alliance Associates, Inc. And finally, but not lastly, David Hall supports my brother Drew Lane and his Drew and Mike podcast, Empire. And that's led to his listeners saving money on their mortgages and refinancings. Now it's our turn, people. Hall Financial is putting its support behind the No Bullshit News Hour and the new Red Shovel Network. So thank you, David.
Thank you.
Hall Financial offers lower rates, better options, and that personal attention you want when talking about your home. The average refi takes 44 days. Hall Financial averages just 19 days. Do the math. That's over half the time. Email dhall at hallfg.com to get the paper moving. Or call 248-308-5000. Tell them LaDuff sent you. Maybe you just want to take equity out of your home. Maybe redo that kitchen. Or shorten the length of your mortgage. You could be less than 3 weeks from saving money with Hall Financial. Email dhall at hallfg.com. Or call 248-308-5000. Tell him you heard it on No BS News, because I appreciate him giving us and the network a shot. NMLS number 1467435, Hall Financial. You won't be disappointed. Now, the No Bullshit News Hour is taped live from last week from the basement of Red Shovel Studios in radio legend Drew Lane's House of Skank. He joins me today along with Karen Dumas and Bob Schettelbauer, back on the board, back from Africa.
Hello.
Our guest is one of the most connected men in the state of Michigan in the business and politics nexus. You know him, you might even love him.
You know him.
Former Detroit mayor and NBA great, Dave Bing. Let's roll it, Bob. Hey, Dave.
All righty, how are you, Charlie?
Real good. Can I call you Dave?
Absolutely.
Because, you know, there's a thing I think about this isn't Great Britain. You are the former mayor of Detroit, Dave Bing, but you don't hold that chair anymore, so you can't have the title for life.
I don't need it for life either.
Yeah,
I don't. I hear everyone calling you Mr. Mayor. Do you like that?
It depends on who calls me that.
I'm not sure what that means.
Do you know this is the only show in Metro Detroit where black and white meet? You know that?
No, I did not know that.
Think about that. What radio show do you know where, like, the whole community is coming together and talk about stuff?
I don't know one.
That's right. So it's an honor for you to be here,
well,
sir.
Well, thank you. It's my honor being here.
You know, and I'm, how do I say this? I don't want to apologize for the old days. It's my job to have kicked your ass, but you are always an elegant gentleman. You, in my estimation, I've seen four mayors here, had the most integrity, You ran the most honest administration, and that's about as much as I'm going to kiss your ass today.
Well, thank you for all of that. I appreciate it, and we tried to do the right thing because after coming in after the fiasco with Kilpatrick, it was very, very important to make sure that we had an honest and open administration.
Do you relate to Gerald Ford at all?
I know Gerald Ford. I know his history, and I can't say I can relate with him.
Well, he took over when Nixon was. Yeah. It was a smaller level, but it was a disaster.
Yeah. Good man, though. He was a good
man. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You're much more elegant than he. I mean, you're an NBA top 50 all-time Hall of Famer, and he just kind of fell down a lot.
Well, up in Ann Arbor, they do things a little different.
Oh. You went to Syracuse, didn't you?
Syracuse University, yep.
Were you the all-time scoring leader there when you left?
I was when I left. When I played, you can only play 3 years because freshmen weren't allowed to play varsity. And now the record has been eclipsed by a couple of different guys. We played on average of 25, 26 games a year. Today, the guys play about 40 games a year, and it's over a four-year period. So when they add up the total points that you may have scored, it's a big discrepancy in terms of 3 years versus 4 years.
What about single season, 28.4?
Well, single season, that is still the record.
I would have changed the subject if I were you. Hey, you also, he averaged in double-figure rebounds at Syracuse also, 6'3".
Would you average as a pro, like 28 and 8 or something like that, as a Piston?
27-1 as a Piston for a couple of different years. And then after my eye injury, I had to change my style.
A detached retina.
Correct.
So I know this about you. Growing up as a kid, right, you fell on a stick.
Correct.
And injured an eye.
Correct.
And then you played with a detached retina.
Yes.
So the 71-72 season, you were playing half blind.
Even today, I can't really see out of my left eye, which was injured as a kid. It's very blurred vision, and still that's the case today.
Wow. So, would you average that season with being blind?
24.
You still play?
Oh, no. I haven't played since I was 40 years old, so that's been 35 years ago.
What is it about? See, you superstars, as a reporter, when you were running, I wanted to play horse. You wouldn't do it. Schwarzenegger, I wanted to work out with him. He wouldn't do it. What is it about being a great, and then as you get older, you don't want to touch the ball anymore? You're not the same as you were?
Well, that plus you don't want somebody to embarrass you.
You knew that was coming.
Oh, some clown reporter.
Yes. That's right.
A goofy shot with some goofy trick shot.
All right, so let's go like this. You got a really unique perch. You, between Kilpatrick and Duggan, you were a really successful businessman. Question number one, who runs Detroit? Who really controls the levers of power?
I think the business community. I would suggest that you've got the Ford family, you've got the Illich family, you now got the Gilbert family. You got Penske, and now Gores is coming in. So you've got five guys who are all billionaires, and they're great business people, but they truly run the city, in my opinion.
You forgot the Maroons. What about them?
I wouldn't say – I don't think the Maroons fit with those other guys.
Because they keep to themselves.
Pretty much.
They're not in the public trough.
Correct.
Eating it alive.
Correct.
So, Dave – this is no bullshit news. So today you let it hang out. You're not trying to indict anybody. But is that model where the billionaires eat first, is that a successful model looking into the future, knowing what you know, having occupied that chair?
Absolutely not.
Whoa.
Absolutely not. I think all of those people are significant in what's happening in the city, but it's a very small group that controls so much. I can revert back to 15 years ago or so when Black Enterprise, for example, we must have had in the top 100 black-owned companies in the country, Detroit probably had 15 or 20 black-owned companies. Today, I don't think we have any. And when you start talking about the population, when you start talking about job opportunities, et cetera, and you look at the major corporations in our city or in this area, there are no significant African Americans in a meaningful position.
Anybody want to jump on that?
I just wondered where they went. What happened to them, the 15?
A lot of them were first generation, and most of us were automotive, whether you were a supplier or an auto dealer. And when the industry got hurt back in the 2008-2009 time frame, a lot of us either sold our businesses or got out.
So what's the next step for black leadership, Mr. Mayor? I mean, we are still a predominantly African-American city, but a lot of people that are in the city feel like they are helpless, that they're hopeless, and that they're left out of this equation of this alleged rebirth.
From a leadership standpoint, you know, we talk about this city coming back, and one of the prominent areas that we lack, everybody says, is education. When I look at the Detroit public schools, for example, I mean, they have gone through hell for a long, long time.
The children. It's a fucking
absolutely.
Mess.
Yes.
Mess.
But when you look at post-secondary education, we've got three institutions in the city of Detroit led by black men. You've got Wayne State. You've got Wayne Community College. You've got the University of Detroit. And it's like they don't even exist. If education is so important to the comeback of this city, they are some of the guys that I think need to be in leadership positions.
Well, I think it goes back to controlling the narrative. You know, I don't think that we even want to, I don't want to say we, but I don't think that that there's a desire to showcase black leadership or to talk about what influence or power that the black community still has. I mean, I heard someone talking on talk radio the other day, and not necessarily a fan of the person, but they were saying that, you know, in spite of the business community having the financial influence and leverage, that but because this is still predominantly African-American community, they can control the vote. But they don't feel like they have any real say-so, influence, or ability to shape the future.
I think if you look traditionally at this city, a lot of the black leadership came from the faith-based community and the unions. And I don't see that's the case at all today. The faith-based community, in my opinion, in a lot of cases, has been bought and sold.
I got to agree.
Yeah.
I really, you know, I'm not going to name the names.
Right,
but,
right.
They're like pigs at a trough. They get fed. They get a check. They get...
Yep.
Commercials.
And please don't say anything. Don't make a ruckus, you know. And that, I mean, 30 years ago, that was not the case. But with all of the changes that we see affecting the city today, we got to look at our next generation in particular and get a lot of them ready for leadership roles.
Well, let's do this. Okay, so here's the comeback narrative. We got cement poured downtown. Skyscrapers going up, FCA's coming in, right? Look closely at this stuff. Look at all, you were the mayor of a bankrupt town. So I'm going to ask you after this, what a bankrupt town looks like from the, you know, municipal services you got to provide. But this FCA deal, we borrowed money to put land together for them. This thing's going to total over $300 million with interest. And I don't think we're going to be building a Jeep, Grand Wagoners?
Grand Cherokees.
For 30 years, full shift, three shifts. I don't see, we don't recoup that money. I look at the Illiches and the hockey arena. Yeah. The city loses money every year. The city's bank loses money. I look at the Gilbert skyscraper. We're cutting them a $250 million check that we borrowed. And we'll pay it back with interest. So how economically does this work if the city coffers not replenished? We got jobs, but is that enough to balance out what we're giving these billionaires?
No, it's not enough.
That is damn straight.
Yeah.
Okay, you're here to talk business.
Yeah.
Okay, tell the people. The white people, too.
Yeah. You know.
Because they're paying.
Oh, when you look.
Right, Dave? The white people are also paying in the suburbs. A lot of suburban money coming. Okay, go ahead.
Absolutely. Sorry. The kind of jobs that that are now available in the city of Detroit are not high-paying jobs. So the citizenry in Detroit who are the seekers of these jobs, I mean, it's a service industry at this point. At one point in time, you know, we were a manufacturing city, and those jobs, because of the unions, offered people at least enough money to take care of their families. What's available today is not enough for people to live on. You look at school teachers, for example, and we talk about once again that if this city is really going to truly come back, then it's going to be based on, you know, world-class education. And we don't have that, and we're a long ways from it. Teachers got to be paid. Outside of parents in the home, the most important people in a child's life is the teacher. And if we don't start paying them and getting them to a point where they can subsidize their families, we're fooling ourselves. I mean, yeah. These jobs that we're talking about at FCA, I wonder, it's supposed to be 5,000 new jobs. Are they really new jobs, okay? Or are they jobs for UAW people that may have been displaced?
And is there a guarantee there's going to be the 5,000?
I don't think so.
And then you look at the numbers, there's going to be 5,000 ancillary jobs.
Yeah.
And then they give us a number, and the numbers never match.
I agree with that. And, you know, maybe the supply base can start to come back a bit, but there are not a lot of people from a supplier standpoint. I was a supplier for a long time, 28 years.
So believe what you're hearing, folks.
I don't think the supply base is going to make the huge investments that are necessary to supply that particular plant. I don't think that's going to happen in the city of Detroit. I think there are outside suppliers that are not in the city. And so because of the major transportation disconnect in our city, even those people who want to work for FCA or supplier are not going to be able to get there. I mean, there's a large percentage of people in the city of Detroit that don't have a car. And public transportation is horrendous. So they can't, if they want a job or offered a job that's outside of the city, for example, they can't even get there. So, I mean, there are a whole bunch of issues. I mean, as the story goes, Detroit's coming back, and it is. It's better than it was several years ago.
That's the way to put it.
I think. But we still got a hell of a long way to go.
Oh, man, yeah. I mean, we're not going to come back to what we were.
No,
we want to make it livable, yeah? Drew, you don't got to raise your hand.
I just am amazed to hear Dave Bing talking because I concur completely, and I keep hearing this. We don't pay teachers enough. We don't invest in kids. Yet stadiums don't pay off for communities. Corporate welfare doesn't work. But we don't do what we say we should do. So that sort of goes back to who's running the city, doesn't it?
Promises made, promises broken. You know, when I go down, and believe me, I was a strong advocate for the Pistons moving back downtown. Now that they're there and they're in a new arena, as I go to the games and I interface with a lot of different fans, I mean, we don't see many Detroiters.
No.
Because they can't afford the ticket price. And on top of that, they can't afford parking fees. I mean, you look at all of those parking lots and, you know, parking is anywhere from $20 to $45. And, you know, tickets are anywhere from a low of $100, $125 up to $300. Detroiters can't afford that, so we're not there.
That's not a surprise, though. We knew that, didn't we?
No.
What used to happen is that I can go all the way back to Coleman Young, for example. And
it's always Coleman Young in it.
You know, what he did is he forced some of the sports team to give tickets away so Detroiters could be able to go to a football game, a hockey game, way back when, a basketball game. Not the case anymore. It's all about
the place
the
is
dollar.
Empty.
It's all about it's the dollar.
Empty.
And see, now that we have become basketball in particular, and sports generally speaking, it's a global business. I mean, the NBA is printing money.
Mm-hmm.
Printing money. And when I mean, the guy's making, you're making $10 million a year today. It's nothing. I mean, these guys.
Yeah, you're a bench player.
Oh, my God. It's unbelievable.
And shoe deals.
Yeah, it's kind of unbelievable what's going on in sports today. And the other thing is I don't think Detroit is a destination city. So those guys, whether it's hockey.
Dare you.
Yeah, hockey, baseball, or basketball. You don't. When the season is over in any of those sports, you won't find any of those guys here. And so when I played, all of us, number one, we weren't making that kind of money, so we couldn't afford a home somewhere else, a second home.
Mm-hmm.
But we lived in the city, and we communicated with the people in the city. People got to know us as a person, not just as an athlete. Not the case anymore.
And that hasn't happened since the Bad Boys. You know, when John Sally lived in the city, you could see him around town. You could see Joe Dumars. I mean, the players were out. Vinnie Johnson. I mean,
they were
out. And so you kind of felt a connectivity with the team. Not since that team have you seen that, in my opinion, from not just the Pistons, but from any of the teams.
Correct.
Well, you know what chafes my ass is we're coming up with public money. And again, that arena is also being paid for by the suburban school districts when you do all the math. So it's Detroit and Livonia. None of us can afford it. But the guy, Goris, spends $100 million on a mansion in Beverly Hills and yet sticks Detroit with a bill to move his guys downtown?
Well, I'll tell you. And, you know, if you look at, I don't believe he's happy with the move right now, with the agreement.
Why you say that?
Well, here's a guy who, when he bought the team, they owned the arena. They controlled everything in Auburn Hills. And, you know, basketball is a city game, so I'm glad they moved back downtown. But the business decision that he made to move the team from out there in a place that he totally controlled, now he's a renter and doesn't have a lot of say in what goes on in the arena. So as successful as he's been and as rich as he is, from a business perspective, I don't know if that was a great move. I don't know that at some time he'll say, well, maybe I should move back out to the suburbs. I hope that doesn't happen because now that they're downtown, we need them downtown.
Or would he consider building his own arena?
Then you've got to once again go through the same process that you're going through with FCA. You've got to find the land. It takes a lot of space to build that arena and the parking that goes along with it. So who knows? But, Detroit is a huge city, a lot of land mass. And at some point in time, he may look at that.
So what is it going to take to make – I mean, I don't think Detroit – will ever be what it used to be. And I think at one time that was the struggle. Everybody wanted it to be what they thought it should be. But what will it take to get Detroit to shift to a place of productivity, prosperity, and a quality of life for the people who live, work, and visit here?
I push for entrepreneurs.
We got to pay for them too?
Not as much. Not as much. If we educate our kids and give them some opportunities to invest in the city and start a business, I think the small business arena is the key. It's not the huge businesses because they're looking for deals. And they're going to take the best deal, which is not necessarily good for the city or the community. So in most small businesses, they're going to locate. I mean, none of them are going to be downtown. They're going to locate in the neighborhoods where there's a need because that's where the people are and that's where your tax base really is. So we've got to figure out, I think, how to make sure we create the mindset that entrepreneurship is the direction that we want a lot of these kids to go into.
Is this socialism? Think about this, right? When the government sticks its beak in the means of production, when it's picking winners and losers, when it's giving money to, let's say, Chrysler, like, well, we're going to need this money from you or we won't be profitable. Well, capitalism would say, then you don't build it or you charge a higher price. Is it socialism or crony capitalism?
Crony capitalism.
Is it the same thing?
We'd have to have a discussion on that.
But come on, let's lay this down. Let's make some news. This is bullshit what's going on in terms of the bottom line. Yes or no?
Yes.
Damn. Could you feel you could say that when you were running the city?
I was pretty outspoken.
You kind of were.
You know, I knew once I had a chance to get there for a short period of time and look at our balance sheet, it was obvious to me that the city was bankrupt. We just had not filed. And when we were over $18 billion in debt and long-term liabilities, there was no way our tax base was going to be able to pay off that debt and supply people with the kind of benefits that they're here for. And so we had to, even before me, whether it was Kilpatrick, whether it was Archer, whether it was Coleman, they kept borrowing money. And, you know, the interest rates way back when were a little low. So you figured, you know, at some point in time, things are going to turn and we can pay this debt down or pay it off. Never happened. And so you couldn't continuously borrow money. As a matter of fact, we got to a point where nobody would loan us money. I wasn't a Trump, so.
Are there a couple deals when you stuck your nose into the city business and you finally said, oh, my goodness. Are there a couple deals that stick out to you as, oh, boy, that was really the wrong direction?
It was a lot of that, to be very honest with you.
More than a couple.
Yeah. When you looked at the only area that was salvageable was the water and sewage department. You know, they were making money.
Mm-hmm. They're always going to make money.
Yeah, they were making money. But none of the other departments, we couldn't make money in another department. I mean, we're a service-oriented city, and we didn't have enough money to give the people the services that they required.
Like cops. Yeah, ambulance.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things I had to do was go to the business community early on and kind of beg for some support because we had...
You had to beg.
Yeah. Beg. We had 21 vehicles in the EMS department. Almost none of them worked. And so
I remember.
So when I went to the business community and they asked me what could they do to help, I said, we need a whole fleet of EMS vehicles because people were dying because, you know, we couldn't service them. The other thing, we didn't have enough police cars. And when you start looking at, once again, they were paying, robbing Peter to pay Paul. And it just didn't work. We got fire trucks. The business community really stepped up when I was there. And I'm thankful for that. And they're still doing that, certain ones.
People are still getting put on hold when they call 911. In Detroit. Yeah.
It's still taking 45 minutes for an emergency call. A cop gets shot and an ambulance still doesn't show up, and I'm spoon-fed some bullshit about this. You just shook your head, yes. That, it's some bullshit.
I think so.
Yeah. Say it. It's some bullshit.
I won't say that.
You need it for a drop, Dave.
But it's not right, and I think... You know, some of the statistics that's provided to the public obviously aren't true. They're not true.
You just waved your hand. You wanted to say it.
They're not
you?
True.
It's not true.
Charlie, you've been saying that for a long time.
Look, me and this guy, it was like the coyote and the sheepdog. You beat each other's asses and then you go home at five. But, you know, I just feel, again, I went hard at the administration. And this is a guy just trying to steady the humiliation of Kilpatrick, the collapse of the world economy, the big three going down. I mean, what do you expect out of a guy? Nevertheless, it's my job.
Right.
People can like it. They don't like it. But I was accurate, was I not, sir?
Yes, you were. And I'll tell you, I mean, it wasn't personal.
No, it wasn't.
I understood. I respected you for what
you had to do. It bummed me out. You're a cool guy.
You know, I had to respect you and others for what you were doing. I mean, that's your job.
Who else was doing anything?
A couple of people, but, you know, we won't name
them. We'll edit that out. That was low. I apologize.
He said no one.
Nobody like you, Charlie.
But, yeah, I mean, and so this great what we basically did, sir, and I know you were there. They gave you a consent agreement. You tried to get it through. City council wasn't paying attention. So in the end, we did balance this on the backs of the cops and the firemen and the secretaries, right?
You're right.
We erased $5 billion out of $7 billion in debt, out of a total of $18 that we owed, just by the benefits we promised guys that got shot in the face.
Well,
is that sad to you?
Yeah, it's sad. And I'll tell you what happened. Had we gotten any real support from Lansing, I will say this. The governor did the right thing by filing for bankruptcy. He did the right thing. There was no way we would get out of the hole without doing that. But he wasn't straightforward with us. I mean, we were hand-fed just a little bit of money on a month-to-month basis just to keep the lights on. And so we could never make a major financial impact because we didn't have the money to do so. And I'll tell you, a lot of credit goes to, whether you like him or not, Orr did a good job.
He sure did.
He did a good job. If without him, I don't think that we would have been nearly as successful coming out of bankruptcy as fast as we did.
Yeah, I think, again, an honest guy that worked hard. That once we gave the keys back to the teenager, though, I think are we headed there again when you're looking at the balance sheet? Because remember, the reason we have a surplus in the budget is we're not paying our pension obligations. And come 2024, the city's got to find $200 million every year. Is that correct?
You're right.
$200 million more every year. So the discretionary part of the budget is $1 billion. We now have to find $1.2 billion, and none of these billionaires are paying into the...
Yeah, they're not paying taxes. Yeah.
It's coming, isn't it?
Oh, it's coming. It's coming.
Is bankruptcy or emergency management coming again?
I hope not.
From the gut.
Yeah, I hope not. I mean...
I can't sit here for hope. I got...
That's all we got.
You got the community here listening to you, the leader.
Yeah.
Do you think... if we continue the way we're going, that we're going to be back where we were 4 years ago?
That's a timing issue more than anything else. You can't project what's going to happen 5, 10 years down the road. I mean, you're hoping that good things happen, but if they don't, you've got a problem. You've got a major problem again.
I mean, we don't have an increase in population, which is something that Duggan said judge him on. We're still losing population.
I'm judging him.
How much are we losing? Just a few thousand?
A few thousand.
I mean, as we stem the tide at least?
That would be the new argument. That's correct. But, you know, that'll let you know. It's pretty miserable in the neighborhood. So if you get this, everybody's looking at downtown, look at it, and then add in the fact that we have a population loss. So as this nice silk stocking grows fat, it's hell out there.
You know, when you talk about our downtown, I've been here 54 years. And I will tell you this, I don't think we've ever had a good downtown. When you compare some of the other major urban cities with Detroit's downtown, we don't compare. We are much farther along than we were, you know, 5, 10 years ago. But I still don't think we've got a thriving downtown. It's much better than it was, but it's not a thriving downtown.
You know, but the bar's so low here. Like, look, you know, I'm talking to our community, the big Metro Detroit, Michigan. You can see people are tired. It's been so bad so long that you look down there and go, hey, man, that's all right, right?
Well, I still think we can't survive isolated. And I was a proponent of regionalism early on. The way we expanded and saved Cobo and saved the International Auto Show, we did it through regionalism. The way we save the zoo is regionalism. And so I know what that means. Okay, we've got
That means come up here north of 8 Mile and tax my house. That's what that means.
Well,
but that's important to know.
Yeah, it is. I mean,
I just know bullshit news. That's what it means.
We cannot survive independently of the rest of this major urban area. I mean, you've got a 50-mile radius here where there are some very wealthy people. A lot of those people were born and raised and educated in Detroit and still love the city.
Yes, sir.
So you've got to make sure that you wrap your arms around those folks and say, you know, you're part of the problem. You left. You know, you took your money and you left. We need you now to come back and help us because we now, on a competitive basis, we're not just competitive against Pontiac or River Rouge or wherever. It's this whole area. It's other states. I mean, Chicago, for example. You know, Indianapolis. I mean, we've got some small cities around us. Dayton, you can think of a few. That's our competition. I mean, Chicago is not our competition. We're not going to be a Chicago. So we have to accept the fact of who we are and what we can be and be fiscally responsible to get there.
But see, I always thought that was the issue. We don't know who we are going to be, you know, and then you've got people that used to grow up here or used to live here. They see Detroit as one way. You've got people that live here that have grown up here. They see Detroit another way. And that's always been those competing factions that, you know, there is no consistent vision or agreement as to what this city can be. You've got people that don't want that segment of the community that's shooting at a gas station or that's walking up and down the street or hanging on the corner. They don't want them here. That's not something that they want. They want to go downtown and see the nice and pretty. But you still have those people that are here that have to be dealt with and incorporated and uplifted the way everybody else should be.
I'm in total agreement with that.
Me too.
Yeah.
You got to find the right we'll get to that after we do a little commercial break. But before we do that, you talking about the governor and yourself, it's legacy. So I want to remind you of the very rugged days. Can I play a little clip for you?
Please.
You might remember this lady. Go ahead, Bob, play that.
Dave Bing and the governor, y'all problem is y'all just sitting up there collecting a check. If y'all really want to run the city of Detroit, come around here in every block of the city of Detroit, look through these houses. If they ain't no good, tear that down so people can stop finding dead relatives in these damn houses and pay these damn Detroit cops what they supposed to earn for being out here protecting the city of Detroit. If not, put my in office. I'll show you how to damn run the city of damn Detroit, and I don't know nothing about it. But I learned quick, fast, and hurt to get y'all sorry up out of here and do the right damn thing. That's why the hell the city of Detroit, that's why people don't want to come to the city of Detroit, because y'all sorry getting off your and doing it was y'all damn family members. Y'all to do the right damn thing. So kiss my black and get off the office. Bye.
Well, Charlie, where'd you find that?
YouTube.
Oh, my God. But let me say this before you ask.
Oh, by the way, Karen also worked in the administration.
Yes.
But your right-hand man right here, Karen Dumas.
I just wonder if the mayor ever talked to her.
Go ahead, Karen.
To me or to the lady? but this is the thing, though. Those same complaints that people had in the Kilpatrick administration and the Bing administration, those same things exist. Where are those people in those complaints today? You don't hear anybody saying anything.
Maybe times are better.
But they're not. People have those conversations in private. But everybody, is it the controlling of the narrative? Is it a dictatorship and everybody's afraid to speak up and speak out? People have private conversations about these things, that the mayor's a bully, that nobody can do it, get anything done. Black people are not included. You know, the neighborhoods are forgotten. But, you know, where are these people? Where are the complaints?
Maybe the city's better.
No, Charlie.
Not that much. Not that much.
Maybe, Dave, we were talking before the show, maybe he's hired a lot of reporters who got a lot of friends. Maybe he...
I was going to say, does that have something to do with the media?
Dave, what do you think, Dave? Because that was a bitch.
Well, he has hired quite a few people from the media, and they control the narrative. You know, and
they bully
and
people.
Let's be honest with it. They control the narrative. So if they don't want to present facts, they don't want to present data, or what they do put out there, you know, people accept. Nobody challenges. That lady you just played, she wanted to challenge us, which was fine. She didn't know all her facts, but that's okay. You know, and so she was emotional, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, she wanted change. And if there's not going to be change, then you want to change leadership. I understand where she was coming from.
Yeah, you lived through all that. Yes. The point is like, okay, so... As the guy that was trying to calm everything down, what you did was that you didn't need to do it. You didn't take a paycheck. Your legacy. Do you think Drew started out calling you Gerald Ford?
I didn't call him Gerald.
You put your time in. You know,
that's a nice thing to call,
how do you think you'll be
way.
Remembered? How do you think you'd be remembered?
I think I'd be remembered as an honest guy who was not looking to be a politician, who went in and tried to manage an unmanageable situation. It was you can't manage a city without money. And we had no money. We didn't have enough money to service the citizens of the city of Detroit. Now, one of the things that I will say is that before I went into city government, I was like a lot of other people who didn't trust the people in city government. When I got there, I will tell you the truth, there were some hardworking, good people. Those people that didn't fit the mold, I had no problem getting rid of them. And so we did that, and I think we brought a value to the city in terms of making sure that we were honest, and I don't think we ever were considered somebody that did something that was dishonest.
I would concur. Now, if I might, Karen, go ahead.
No, I was going to say one thing that I know a lot of people, a lot of residents weren't, because the mayor wasn't a ribbon-cutting, baby-kissing kind of mayor. He was really working, dedicated on impacting the infrastructure. And you see the benefit of that now in terms of the lighting, in terms of the rec departments, the new
vehicles. Are we going to get to that?
All that. But I'm saying, you know, a lot of people were like, you know, well, we don't see him. You know, where is he? But you were there, and you were at the hospital if somebody was hurt. You know, you were buying beds for kids that had been in accidents and didn't have any place to sleep when they got home. And those weren't the things that we told you, Charlie.
You
those
didn't
weren't
put
the
them
things.
On TV,
yeah,
right.
You know, it wasn't like that. It was just get it done. And so that kind of threw a lot of people off. Because they didn't see you kissing babies and cutting ribbons.
Dave, what kind of glasses you got there? Are you nearsighted? Are those bifocals?
I'm blind.
You're blind?
In his left eye, he's blind.
Do you hate your glasses? Do you hate wearing them?
No.
It's a setup, Mr.
Yes.
Mayor.
Yes,
be
you
careful.
Do. Just
be
say
careful.
Yes. You hate them, you forget them, you lose them, you break them. You'd give anything, Dave. Not to need them anymore. I know that's true. But anyway, you can be done with those glasses. Dr. Yaldo, have you gone to see Dr. Yaldo?
No.
Okay, listen to this. Dr. Yaldo has helped over 50,000 metro area people get 20/20 vision or better with what's called CATS Custom LASIK, the most advanced in the world, and the amazing multifocal lens implants for people 50-plus that will give you great near and far vision for life. And you'll never get cataracts, Dave. No matter what, everyone should get an eye exam, and regular insurance covers it. You still have city insurance?
Oh, no.
Okay. Well, you have insurance?
Yes.
Okay. And see if LASIK or multifocal lens implants are right for you. That evaluation is free. Here, you got a pen there? I'll get you the number later. It's 800-398-EYES, and say LaDuff sent you, and you'll get the no-bullshit discount. That's 800-398-EYES, or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. I do have a testimonial. You want to hear it?
No.
Okay, it was a blind guy. Okay. ADR Consultants, providing full business, construction management, and IT consulting services for your company, municipality, and law enforcement agency. ADR, experienced, overseeing more than $250 million in private and public construction projects since 2001. Need to reduce costs? Need to re-engineer processes or find better vendors? ADR has saved clients millions. ADR Consultants are experts in procurement, compliance, and minority participation. Honest, ethical, smart. Call Barry Ellentuck at 248-318-9424 for a consultation. Get the job done right, on time, on budget. ADR Consultants, tell them LaDuff sent you. 248-318-9424. Now sponsoring Bob Schettelbauer. And the mayor has to leave in 10, is that what you're telling me? That's going to be perfect, sir. Hey, should we get Joe on the line? Maybe Joe's got something smart to ask. Okay.
No.
Okay.
Not today.
Sir, are there two Detroits?
Yes. There are two Detroits. There's a Detroit where a very small percentage of our people are doing okay. The large percentage are still struggling. And those are the people that are true Detroiters that are in our neighborhoods.
Real quick. You work with the young men. I'm working with the young men. The young man had to move out of his mom's house, takes two buses to get to school to King High. He's a really good kid, smart. I wrote about him. People sent me $500. I picked him up from school, went to visit his mother. They're foreclosing on her home. The kid doesn't look at the check twice, and he gives it to his ma, right? We got the house bailed out, and she's got 2 months breathing room. But I look at this kid that's got all the stuff to make a difference in his own life and everybody else's. He's strong, he's smart, and he's in that pit of discontent, and there's not really a lot of people there to help him.
sent in my way.
What have you been doing?
I've been, for the last 5 years, I've been mentoring young boys by pairing up young black boys from the city of Detroit with black men who basically came from the same kind of environment. We had our first graduating class last year with 18 boys who were in the senior class. 18 boys graduated. 14 of those boys are now in college, and the other four we got jobs for. Last night, I had my second graduation of 11. All 11 graduated. So far, 7 of them have already been admitted to a college, and we've got 4 more that we've got to work on. So I'm saying, as we change the narrative about us not caring for our young people or caring for each other, nothing could be farther from the truth. I've got over 100 boys in my program, and I've got over 100 men that I've matched up with these boys. And so I'm not worried about the quantity of boys that I got. It's about quality. And these men are giving these boys quality time, quality advice, helping them to understand how important school and education is, and getting them ready to face the harsh world that they're going to grow up into.
What's the name of your program?
It's Bing Institute.
How do we find it?
I'll give you all of the information before I leave here. I'll give you everything.
Okay, I think I found you a good young dude. We were, you know, talking. I was in my backyard.
We can help him.
He's dreaming so big, and I said, look, he's like, I want to buy lots around the world and replant them, and the earth is getting warm, and I want to be something more than just my. And I said, young man, focus on that education. Learn how to plant a tree. Learn how to manage the property tax. Your job is right in front of you. And, you know, now he needs to help, like, college entrance exams. Right.
And we do all of that. I mean, last night, the principal of King High School was at our graduation because two of the 11 kids that graduated were from King. And so that principal was there. So we've got a great relationship. And I know that between her and what we do at Martin Luther King High School, we can get this kid and help him.
But, okay. Charlie, this is the next generation of leadership. I mean, because it's a one-on-one engagement. It's not a come in, speak at a career day, and leave, and the kids are left to hang on to words that they may not ever hear repeated again. Mm. And that is what's making a difference. I had the opportunity to see some of the young men. You give them custom suits. They get watches at graduate. You're not telling the whole story, Mr. Mayor, but he sends them off ready and with the support to get them through the next chapter. That's what makes the difference. So when we talk about how to change leadership in this city, not only from the young man's perspective, but also from the mentor's perspective. Correct. A lot of times black males feel like they're left out of the equation. They're included in that discussion.
There's just a ton of confusion in the inner city. I mean, it's just a drift.
We
can't have it.
No, I absolutely agree. Absolutely agree.
Okay, then I'm glad to see you. I actually feel warm about this. And
good.
You're a good dude. Mike Duggan. What do you make of them? Takes a lot of credit for what you and Orr did. I mean, like the lights, the clean balance sheet, the balanced budget.
Lights.
Demolition. You weren't doing it.
I thought Mayor Duggan did the lights.
Dave?
No, he didn't. He absolutely didn't. But, you know, I won't slam Duggan. I mean, he's in the leadership role right now, and we hope that he's making the right decisions for the future of the city. But we still, once again, got to tell the truth.
Well, let's tell the truth. I mean, look, he starts picking on the lights. Look, mayors, politicians do that. They take credit for stuff. They cut ribbon, blah, blah, blah. But he only starts talking about the lights after he stopped talking about the demolition, which was the greatest thing since sliced bread, when you take a look at the numbers. So he was saying under you weren't tearing anything down. You were doing it haphazardly. It was an environmental disaster. Go ahead.
None of that's true. I mean, we tore down in 2.5 years about 9,000 homes. And we had no problems. And we did it.
And you had no money.
No, and we did it at a much lower cost. You know, we started off as an average of about $10,000 per home. By the time we finished, it was down to about $8,500 a home. You know, when they got in trouble, that administration got in trouble, it was because they were paying $17,000 to $21,000 to tear down a home. We were doing the same thing, okay? And so nobody can understand why the price jumped that much. That's demolition. When you look at lighting, I mean, we didn't have enough money. Our lighting department was in, it was a hellhole. We didn't have enough people. We had no money. We had no replacement parts, et cetera, et cetera. So we had to get, we had to go to the outside in order to create, I forgot what you call it right now.
The lighting authority.
Right, the lighting authority, so that the debt would not come directly to the city. Because the city was not in a position to borrow money. But there were so many things like that that we had to do that, you know, you do what you have to do. In
moving the peas around the plate, get it done, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I remember it all. Yeah. You know, I really do. So I look at the feds didn't send you $250 million to do this. I remember scraping and clawing. So by the math that 15, 16, basically the average price is $15,000 for all of this.
Yeah.
We squandered, if we go price to price, we squandered $100 million. And then the mayor's up in Mackinac at that big boozy convention saying he wants to borrow another $200 million to do what we should have done already?
Well, I'll tell you, a lot of homes still need to be torn down. And I get a lot of people in different neighborhoods that would say, okay, if you're going to tear them down, what are you going to replace it with? Well, you're not going to be able to replace them anytime soon. There are still, I mean, I was honest with people in saying there are some neighborhoods that we just are not going to be able to get to. Tell people the truth.
You did.
Yeah, tell them the truth. And they may not like it, but at least you're being honest with them. And they have then the facts to make a decision. There are neighborhoods in our city that are going to be a long, long time being like they are because we don't have the money. We're not going to get the money short term to invest in those neighborhoods. So as long as people understand that and they make the decision to stay there, that's on them.
Mm-hmm.
But tell them the truth.
But you got to admit, a regular person listening to this show, I'm looking at Johnny Silk Suit getting tens, hundreds of millions of dollars, right? I'm looking at, and my words, not yours, complete mismanagement of the municipal levers. And you're asking this guy to be patient. You're asking that kid. Remember where this demolition money came from.
Mm-hmm.
That was troubled asset relief money designed to help people with their mortgages. And she's going to get blasted out of there, two abandoned houses next to her house, and you expect her to, like, well, you know, I'd be pissed. I am pissed.
Yeah, and you must understand that. You have people who've been here for several generations. They don't want to move in a lot of cases. They can't afford to move somewhere else. Their whole family history is in that location. But you must tell people the truth and let them make the final decision in terms of what they're going to do, whether they're going to stay or whether they're going to go somewhere else. There are neighborhoods in the city that I think where they're rehabbing some homes. And if you can get some of these people in a very desperate situation to get them to move into a better neighborhood. I mean, to me, rather than putting them out, that's a better answer for them.
And then it creates density, which, you know, reduces crime. Yeah. It also gives the city a more efficient way of providing city services as opposed to going to one neighborhood with one house and then having to service a neighborhood that has several homes. So, yeah, that makes sense. And that was part of what the mayor tried to put together.
Yeah. Okay. Well, did you ever put together some money for a girlfriend's program? Did you ever hook her up, throw galas for her, anything like that?
I won't even answer that. The answer is no, but I won't get into that
one. You won't get into that one. You don't always have to take envelopes. You can always just put a gala together. Listen, sir, you're a black man. Where's the black leadership in Detroit?
You know, one of the things that I've had a lot of questions about is just that. Where is the black leadership? And it probably exists in some pockets, but nobody wants to step up and take that mantle. It's difficult. It's hard.
Because there's a machine?
Yeah, that has something to do with it also. But I'm hopeful in the next election that Duggan doesn't run unopposed.
You don't want him to win, do you?
He needs to be opposed, so he has to work for it. And there are some people out here that I know that are looking to put something together where they may run against him.
That's a take it from me. When you go against that thing, and you don't take something a piece of its ass, that's a hard thing to stand up to.
Oh, absolutely.
That's why you see the city council laying down like they do.
Is there a city council?
Oh, good. Is there?
I know I caught hell from the city council when I was there.
Yeah.
But they seem to be silent at this point, and I don't know the reason for that.
They can't do math.
I have a theory on that. I mean, I think that Duggan has taken credit for not, you know, Kevin Orr could have eliminated their positions, reduced or eliminated their salary. So I think Duggan is like, listen, I got Kevin Orr to let you stay, so, you know. I need your support, because they don't. You don't hear from them on anything. So
the only reason you're in those positions is for a paycheck, you're in the wrong business. You're in the wrong business.
Without doubt. Now, before you get out of here, who do you like in the NBA Finals?
I'm definitely with San Francisco, even without Kevin Durant.
Man, you're old. San Francisco. They changed the name, sir, a lot of years ago.
Well, that's where they are. Yeah.
Golden State.
Yeah, that's where they are.
Well, I want to know, who should the Pistons be looking at to pick up for next season? I mean, I've heard, what's his name? Paul? What's his name?
Chris Paul.
Chris Paul. Who else should the Pistons be looking at?
Too old and too much money he makes. Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, too old and too much money. The Pistons are in a tough situation because Van Gundy made some bad decisions. I like
Dave Bing letting it all hang out today.
I really liked him as a person, but as a coach and president and general manager, bad contracts, and now they're up against the wall where they can't even go out and get a good free agent. And, you know, in the draft, they're, I think, 15. So wow. You're not going
They're
to,
always too high.
Yeah, you're not going to get a great player at number 15. So, I mean, the reality is that we're a few years away from revamping the squad and being not just competitive, but trying to go to the next level.
I got a couple guys here. They may be willing to fill in until you can do it.
No.
Three, four? No, they're not them?
No.
I tried.
I want to ask you, you were talking about when Detroit had no money, and you said you had to ask people from outside for help. Who would be the first couple people you'd call that would say, absolutely, I'll help you out?
Can I guess?
Yes.
Okay, you would call Roger Penske.
Yes.
You would call Pete Karmanos?
I didn't call Pete, but I did call Tony Early from DTE. He was there at that time. And Gilbert was there. So those are the three guys that would get the first phone call.
What happens if Gilbert doesn't get well? I mean, we basically, the whole city is owned by one person. What do you think happens?
Well,
and I would wish him all the best.
Right. And he's put together a pretty good management team. But then it depends on his family and what they want to do with all of those investments.
Because it's all private.
Yeah, right. And so you're not sure. You're not sure.
So we're in an uncertain time.
Yes, we are.
It's really interesting. Really interesting. Have you read Shit Show, The Country's Collapsing and the Ratings Are Great? It's out in paperback. You go to our website, No BS News
We'll give
them
a copy.
This is for the audience.
Okay. Oh, okay.
I'm going to definitely give them a copy. we're part of the Red Shovel Network. It's rocking and rolling. Drew apparently is in control of an empire. It was in the newspapers. It must be so.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
And,
payroll out here.
Download us, give us a rating, all that blah, 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 blah,
yeah,
bullshit. We're really rolling. Sir, I heard you're a lover of smooth jazz.
I am.
We like to go out with a tune here. How would you like a little Miles Davis?
Wonderful.
Here we go. Thank you so much for being
here. Thank you,
Charlie. Really a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.